Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of today's interview with Dr. Scott Banks. He's a good colleague of mine here in New York. He practices on Long Island. He's been doing it for several decades, and he's a chiropractor. Also one of the few individuals, a pioneer individual, who's achieved a certification in functional medicine. That's a measure of a great deal of training and competence. And so when you go to him, you get the best of chiropractic in terms of structural manipulation and dealing with aches and pains, but also a vast amount of nutritional experience, which comes to the fore in his new book, Natural Cures for Dummies, which just came out this month. So congratulations again, Scott. It's great that you came out with a book.
Thank you very much, Ron. Appreciate that.
So, okay, we're talking, let's get specific here. What are these days some of your mainline supplements that you most depend on in your practice?
The number of the best nutrients that I like using in the practice, of course, there are some good fundamentals, but I would like to say that, unfortunately, there are a lot of very poor quality nutrients on the market. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to name specific brands, of course, but in the professional arena that I know that you use, as well as what I use in my practice, is a light years ahead of things that you will get in the big chains. So be very careful that all multivitamins or all fish oils or all probiotics are not created equal.
Right, and certainly we've also seen with the herbal medicines, to some extent, a biased, ill-informed attack by the Attorney General of New York on some of the major supplement retailers. But, frankly, sometimes the quality is not as good as the physician brands that you can your patients purchase from you directly or my patients purchase from me directly.
Absolutely. And so the most expensive nutrients are the ones that don't work. So you don't want to necessarily buy on price point. You want to buy really what's effective for you. So my favorite products, I am a big fan of a particular type of colostrum. I think that is great for really as a sealer for the gastrointestinal tract. Being that 70% of our immune system centers around the gut, a lot of people's issues are related to gut issues. So my first line of attack is towards the digestive tract and taking care of just about anything with patients.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because colostrum, a heck of a lot more colostrum is used in livestock than in humans. And one of the major reasons for that is that under the cramped conditions of industrial animal husbandry, the animals often develop debilitating diarrhea and lose weight. They get the wrong kind of feeds. They are exposed to germs. And the babies, the calves or the young pigs or chickens, get diarrhea. And actually, they use a lot of colostrum to seal the gastrointestinal tracts of these animals, especially animals that sometimes don't have enough breastfeeding. They're weaned too early.
Absolutely. So colostrum is my go-to formula, and bovine colostrum is about 40 times more potent than human colostrum. And for patients that don't know what colostrum is, it's the milk that's in the cow's udder at the time the calf is born, and that has all the immune factors, all the growth factors that the animal needs to sustain life, especially in the beginning of life.
So you link this not just to people who get colds and flus, they're very vulnerable to illness, but also to patients who have what's termed leaky gut. Can you explain that?
Sure. Now, as I see a lot of patients with autoimmune issues, and I'm sure that you do, and we know that these are on the rise now, and I assume that everybody with an autoimmune has leaky gut unless proven otherwise. And there's a very good test that I can actually use through a lab called Cyrex Labs, the Array 2, that does look at leaky gut. Basically, you have these tight junctions in your cells, in your digestive tract, which is one cell thick that separates the outside world from your inside environment, and about 70% of your immune system is hovered right underneath that epithelial lining in your digestive tract, which makes sense because the most amount of foreign messages that come into your food, into your body, are from your food. So you want to be able to seal the gut. If the gut is leaky, then you're going to get large protein molecules in from things like grains, especially gluten or casein from milk. So we look at wheat and we look at dairy as two of the largest offenders for contributing to autoimmune disorders, which have a component of leaky gut.
Which also relatively new foods in human evolution, which perhaps are a little bit foreign. The body may not have had time to completely adjust to the tremendous influx of dairy products and wheat products that we now consume.
Correct. And the wheat, I just found out recently that just made me go nuts, is that even wheat in this country, it's not a GMO crop. Wheat is not genetically modified, but they still spray it with glyphosate, which is the active constituent of Roundup. So after wheat is harvested, they spray it with Roundup, the active constituent glyphosate, which is a toxin. It causes cancer. It causes autoimmune disorders. Mm-hmm. And why would you want to be eating this stuff and putting it into your body?
Well, yeah, and this is just confirmed by the World Health Organization, and now is creating great consternation at Monsanto.
Right, and I've seen some lovely commercials for Monsanto on TV lately, how good they are for us, but I think we know otherwise that the same company that made Agent Orange also makes Roundup, and our genetically modified foods are out there so that every time you eat them, you're taking a nice bite of Roundup.
You see, they think they have a public relations problem or a messaging problem. Actually, they have a much more fundamental problem, which is that the products that they make, it's not a matter of communicating the wholesomeness of the product, as the products are so inherently bad that they need to take a different turn. No matter how much greenwashing they do, they can't camouflage the fact that the GMOs are at the very least suspect and potentially, you know, cancer-causing and disease-causing.
So I know that listening to your show over the years, you've definitely had sessions on genetically modified organisms on food. But once you start looking at this, and I would encourage people to watch the movie Genetic Roulette, and you can get that at geneticroulettemovie.com by Jeffrey Smith. I think the movie came out in 2012. It really brings you up to speed around genetically modified foods. And basically, what we want to know is if you're eating the food, you want to know if it's genetically modified so that you have a choice to eat something that is organic. And organic, by definition, means also non-GMO, hopefully.
Okay, so these are some things that might be injurious to the gut lining and furthering leaky gut. So let's keep going. You mentioned colostrum. What are some of the other top supplements that you like?
There's an extract from colostrum known as proline-rich polypeptides, which is about 3-4% of colostrum. And from this one company, they're able to extract that proline-rich polypeptides, and you spray that into your mouth. And I find that to be very good for somebody's immune system to help balance out the immune system. So not to rev it up or not to bring it down, but to really balance it out with your TH1 and your TH2 cells. So that's the proline-rich polypeptides. I think if I had just one nutrient that I would be allowed to give patients, it would be a very high-quality coenzyme Q10 as a key mitochondrial nutrient. The methylating B vitamins of 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, which is the much better form of folic acid, as B9, and then methylcobalamin as B12. Those are key players for me. Everybody, I'm sure that you see, is also deficient in vitamin D3. Epidemically low, the ranges from the labs are grossly broad. 30 is the low end of normal. You want to have a reading on your vitamin D levels between 60 and 80 nanograms.
Yeah. That's just a little anecdote, and you probably see this kind of thing, but I just saw a patient whose vitamin D had gotten up to 58, and her doctor said, uh-oh, you better stop taking vitamin D because that's much too high.
No. And what a little unknown fact is that vitamin D is really a gut sealer. It keeps the cells in your intestinal tract tight. And if you look at just about every autoimmune disorder, they have a leaky gut. And so the gut really needs to be sealed.
Yeah, and it seems to me, I mean, I don't know if this is your experience, but the more inflamed a person is or the more challenged they are with a chronic infection or some sort of chronic health problem, the less likely they have to have optimal vitamin D. And I think some of it is because vitamin D is eaten up by inflammation, and you need more to combat these challenges.
Did you say vitamin D or vitamin E?
I said vitamin D. D.
Oh,
as
vitamin
a dog.
D. Absolutely. Yeah. It's you know, we used to think it was just vitamin D, and if you don't have it, you're going to get osteoporosis, and it's associated with rickets. Now we know that it's really so much more than just a vitamin. It's really like a pro hormone I had the opportunity to see Michael Hollick, who's the MD, PhD, that brought vitamin D to the forefront. And if I remember correctly, he was fired from his job at Boston University.
Yeah, he had the temerity to suggest that people should tan. So they said, wow, that's, you know, we got to kick this guy out.
And they did. But thank God he did get his job back. And he has brought vitamin D to the forefront. And so it's not uncommon for me to recommend 5,000, 10,000 IUs of vitamin D per day in a non-GMO soy oil. So something like extra virgin olive oil in the vitamin D instead of soybean oil. Because the soy is about 90% GMO in this country, so you want to make sure it's either non-GMO soy or an extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah, sometimes tough to source, but worth trying. Okay, so on the anti-inflammatory front, what are some of the supplements that you favor?
Well, my most favorite nutrient in the inflammatory arena is curcumin, or turmeric, and I find that to be extremely anti-inflammatory, as well as fish oils. And sometimes the higher the dose of the omega-3 essential fatty acid has a very powerful anti-inflammatory role to play with patients. And then we look at other things as far as proteolytic enzymes, trypsin, chymotrypsin, bromelain. Those are all very powerful anti-inflammatories. Quercetin would be a very powerful antihistamine anti-inflammatory that really works quite well, too.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to steer you in the direction I want to take you with this. Magnesium certainly must play a role in your practice. What are your thoughts on that?
That is so true. Magnesium is one of those nutrients that I think at least 70% of the population in the United States is deficient in. So it depends what I'm trying to do. If somebody is suffering from constipation, I would probably give it to them in the form of magnesium citrate. If they're deficient in magnesium levels, I would use magnesium bisglycinate chelate. It's a chelated form of magnesium, as compared to something like a magnesium lactate or magnesium oxide.
Right, so which are less well-absorbed, but also less well-tolerated. I mean, if you want a patient to go to the bathroom, you can give them magnesium citrate, but you won't use the magnesium that much.
That's one way for patients to get mad at you.
Well, or not, because you can't underestimate the number of patients who are constipated. And while magnesium citrate's not the best way to get your magnesium levels up, it's a good way to normalize your bowel movements.
Absolutely.
Use it right. If you use it right. But if you don't tell a patient, I agree. You know, like,
you did ask me what my favorite nutrients are. Yep. One of my favorite things to put patients on are very high-quality probiotics.
Okay.
And I look for strains that adhere to the intestinal tract wall, that grow and cultivate and multiply, and things that are different than you're going to find in over-the-counter yogurts.
Mm-hmm. Like Activia, you know, a lot of people just take a yogurt. And at least there's some live material in that yogurt. That's an improvement over yogurts of the past.
Absolutely. And we want to have diversity in our gut flora. And we now know that what goes on in your gut is not like Las Vegas. It doesn't stay in the gut. It actually goes out of your gut. And one of the most important things that keeps your gut in good shape, that keeps your immune system in the gut, is your good, friendly flora of good bacteria.
And so that's part of anybody's program of reconstitution is to normalize that.
Absolutely. And so many patients have disruptive guts because they've taken a lot of antibiotics, whether they were a child or they got older, or they eat commercially raised livestock that has a lot of antibiotics in it. So if you're eating, a regular commercial chicken that you buy in the supermarket or meat, it's loaded with antibiotics. 70% of antibiotics in this country is sold as animal feed. And so you're killing off your gut flora every time you eat it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many reasons why our gut flora is not working. That's one of them. But, you know, in addition to deliberately taking antibiotics, you're inadvertently getting them, and that can be a problem for sure. So what about detoxification? Is that an important part of how you work with patients? Do you place them on detox programs?
I love doing a detox, actually. I just ordered some detox kits today for myself and my daughter, and come the Monday after Easter, I will be doing a 21-day detoxification program with a great quality product from one of the companies that I use as well as you use.
Oh, great. So how does that work? You take it's sort of a powder product, and you take it and you eat lightly and kind of go through that process for for up to 3 weeks. You can do that.
21 days, because that's the amount of time that antibodies stay in your body. So you would go on an elimination diet where you would remove the biggest trigger foods. Of course, that wheat is number one, dairy, corn, eggs. I do like eggs. Eggs could be a superfood, but they can also be a bad food because they do trigger a lot of reactions in patients. Peanuts, soy would come out of the diet, any processed foods. Coffee, unfortunately, would come out. Alcohol for a period of about 21 days while you're drinking a detoxification beverage, mm-hmm. which these days tastes pretty good.
Protein-based.
Protein-based, made from a rice and a pea protein with nutrients in it that support both phase 1 and phase 2 liver detoxification, like sulforaphane glucosinolates and things like sodium sulfate from green tea and ellagic acid and watercress and Jerusalem artichoke, dandelion root. So these would be nutrients to really to support the detoxification process.
Yeah, well, explain that liver thing. You know what? I mean, I know what phase 1 and phase 2 are, but some of our listeners may not know what that means.
Well, thank you for asking that question. Your liver has two different phases of detoxification. You have phase 1, which last time I looked were 57 different cytochrome P450 pathways. And that's sort of like having a house with a lot of rooms and taking the garbage and putting it into the hallway from each room.
Right.
And then phase 2, your body has to make those toxins water-soluble, so you excrete them out in your urine and in your feces.
Okay.
Some people are very revved up on phase 1, mm-hmm. and phase 2 can't keep up, and you produce a lot of free radicals, and that does a lot of damage to your body.
You know, a little illustration of that just came out in the news. You know, news headline is that if you're drinking a lot of booze, it's good to drink coffee. Why? Coffee reduces your risk of liver cancer. We know that people drink a lot, have a higher risk of liver cancer. Why that is, it has to do with that phase 1 that you were talking about, is that coffee and caffeine tend to actually speed up your liver metabolism, in effect giving you a little bit of a detox. Of course, if there's a traffic jam at your phase 2, it's like letting too many cars on the LIE, and you live out there in Huntington, you know what happens when that occurs.
Thank God I live 3 miles from my office, so I don't have to commute back and forth.
You take the back roads. You take the back roads.
Absolutely.
Right.
Now, coffee could be either good.
Yeah.
But coffee can be really bad, and people put a lot of bad stuff in their coffee, from artificial sweeteners and sugar, and then they'll use those little Irish cream or French vanilla that has artificial chemicals in it. You don't need any of that stuff. Just good, organic, fair trade coffee with a little bit of coconut milk or some almond milk or some rice milk, or if you have to, some half and half that's organic. And then you have yourself a good coffee. But it has to be organic because coffee is the most sprayed crop in this country.
Or these days, bulletproof coffee. That's in vogue because it actually gives you some more satiety. It's almost like a little bit of a meal in itself.
I had the opportunity to meet Dave Asprey, the author of the Bulletproof Diet.
Oh, wow.
And I had his coffee every day, and it was superb. It had butter in it, organic butter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we even had some with some coconut oil in it. And it
right.
definitely held you over, and it tasted real good.
Yeah. I mean, he was inspired by the Tibetans who use yak butter in their coffee or in their tea. I guess they have tea over there, not coffee.
So I'm not so anti-dairy as long as you get good dairy and if you've been tested that you're okay with dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And the testing would be an IgG food test, which is a delayed food sensitivity, instead of an IgE, which is done in a traditional allergen office. So if you are on a modified elimination diet or doing a detoxification program, then dairy must come out of the program for a while. But, you know, dairy's been very messed with also because of the pasteurization process and then all the other things that happen with dairy.
You know, I see, in addition to being a DC and a CN, you're a CGP, which is a certified gluten practitioner. What in the heck is that?
Well, Dr. Tom O'Brien started a program a while ago, and I first heard him talk about at the Institute for Functional Medicine Symposium on Thyroid and Adrenal, the relationship between gluten and thyroid. And so since that time, any patient that comes with a thyroid issue, including Hashimoto's or Graves' disease or any autoimmune thyroid, is immediately check them for wheat or just for gluten sensitivity or immediately pull them off. So this gluten story has been emerging and emerging and emerging, and it was about, I think, 2013. I said, I think maybe I should stop eating gluten.
Oh, okay. So finally, got. I mean, you knew about it for at least 10 or 15 years, but, you know.
I thought I was immune when I got my diploma. I was immune from it.
No, you probably thought, I gave it the office. I spend my whole day talking about it. Let me go home and have a bagel. You know,
absolutely.
I need
and
a break.
I do miss a good bagel once in a while with some lox and cream cheese on it, but I have really cut that out of my diet, and I feel really good. No more indigestion. I lost probably, I don't know, 10 pounds of fat weight, mm-hmm. and I feel great. But I see it in my patients from psoriasis, eczema, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, all these different disorders, and a lot of them are autoimmune disorders, that gluten becomes this major trigger. I had the opportunity to see Dr. Alessio Fasano also, who's a pediatric gastroenterologist, has a book called The Gluten Recovery Plan, and he is the one that's really has brought the research of wheat. When you eat gluten, you release an enzyme called zonulin. All human beings make zonulin. Zonulin breaks the tight junctions between the cells in your intestinal tract. You cause leaky gut. Fragments translocate into your bloodstream. Your immune system recognizes that foreign, and now you have an activated immune system as a result of eating gluten. Wheat is not the wheat of your mother's day. It doesn't resemble anything from biblical or ancient wheat. It's a relatively new product to put into our body. It's only been around for about the last 10,000 years, which is 500 human generations, which is not a tremendous amount of time for somebody to adapt to something.
Indeed, yep. You know, evolution takes hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years to occur, and we kind of hit our bodies hard with a new nutrient that we may not be well suited to eat.
Right, and human beings, I think, from what I've heard listening to Dr. William Davis, who wrote The Wheat Belly, is that human beings really do not need to eat cereal grains, and that we would be better off. And if somebody has an autoimmune disorder, which is now the number third leading cause of death in this country, and if you include cancer and heart disease, maybe the first leading cause, because maybe cancer and heart disease are autoimmune disorders too, that gluten has a lot to do with that.
Well, Dr. Scott Banks, I admire your passion. Obviously, you got a fire in the belly to get patients well using the latest techniques. You're always abreast of some of the latest findings in complementary and alternative medicine. I think you spent a lot of time learning and also now sharing through your new book, which is Natural Cures for Dummies. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? I understand there's a book signing coming up in the Huntington area for those of our listeners who are from around here.
We have a book launch at the Book Review, which is a beautiful place in downtown Huntington from 7 to 8 on Thursday, April 16th, and we'd love to see people there. They can get a signed copy from me. But it's just a great reference guide for patients that wanted to learn more about functional medicine, to take more of a functional medicine dietary approach to what's ailing them. I think that most patients' diets are could all use some improvement, and this is a great tool to be able to help them do that.
Right. So buy it for your mother, buy it for your kid, buy it for a skeptical friend, even buy it for your doctor, because it's a great intro. And how do patients find out about your practice?
Thank you for asking that. My website is spinelife.com, spinelife.com, and our phone number is 877-698-4826. That's toll free, and we are in Huntington, New York.
And if you Google Dr. Scott Banks, you probably also find your way to his practice. So thank you very much for joining us. Anything else you want to add?
Well, it was great being here, and I love that we're getting this message out to more and more people. I think the Institute for Functional Medicine is sort of at a critical mass, that it's really starting to really steamroll. The last event that I was at was sold out. Actually, every event is been sold out. The last event that I was just at in Tucson, Arizona, had 360 docs, and it was sold out for about 6 weeks prior. The Applied Functional Medicine and Clinical Practice Program. So great stuff, and this is because of public demand. They're looking for a better way to handle chronic diseases of aging.
Well, thanks very much for your message. Congratulations on your book, Natural Cures for Dummies. Dr. Scott Banks, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.